Hey, America, start listening now. Hey, Danny.
Yes?
Want to know something funny?
What?
San Marino came in 10th place in televoting in this year's Eurovision final.
Say that again.
San Marino, 2019 Eurovision, 10th place in televoting in the final.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Well, hello, and welcome back to 12 Points from America, a Eurovision podcast from America, because you let in Australia. I'm Eric.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny. This week, we're focusing on the intricacies of the Eurovision Song Contest voting system, televote and jury vote, and all of the nuances in between. I'm just going to jump right in there and ask Sam, our resident expert, what the hell is it?
It is it is a complex melange of mathematical, numerical orgy of...
Until you said mathematical, it sounded delicious.
Mathematical!
But now I'm...
And until you said numerical orgy, I wasn't interested.
And now I have, so I've gotten everybody's attention, I suppose.
So... start with the jury vote. Raw basics, what is the jury vote?
Okay, so Eurovision voting right now is given to us. Those numbers are served up by a jury vote, and that is a 5-member jury for each participating nation that they, each individual juror ranks their songs, the songs that are presented to them, favorite to least favorite, or as we'll talk about Belarus, least favorite to favorite. It gets confusing. Just stay tuned. We'll get through this together, guys. And then the public televote, which is given equal weight to the jury. And public will all call in or text in to a country-specific numbers. Countries cannot vote for their own nation. However, you'll often see swaps that, culturally aligned nations may vote for each other. Like Greece and Cyprus is the famous example.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Which you'll see a lot of. But nowadays, they will take the votes from the jury and give those results country by country by country. And then they'll take the televote and kind of squish all those results together and then present those numbers after the jury. So it's a really complicated algorithm that they do it in, but it somehow works itself out and it sends us to the Netherlands next year.
Every country, based on the favorites... The favorites from that respective country gives the jury gives their 12 points, 10 points, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Correct.
And then the televote is tabulated, and it is also assigned, based on the results, a value of 12, 10, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Exactly,
right?
Okay. Yes.
Yes, good.
So jury and televote have equal weight. They have just as much of a result, an effect on the results as the other. Each nation is weighed equally. So you'll have little San Marino with the same power as big old Germany or Russia. And somehow it all works out. Kind of, sort of, But yeah, that is Eurovision voting. And it's evolved a lot over the last, couple of decades, as things are wont to do. Like in 1956...
It started out just jury, didn't it?
It started out just jury. Scoping out the history, it started out in 56 where there were... 2-member juries, and members from each country awarded 2 points to their favorite song. Technically, keep in mind, there were only 7 countries, 14 songs in that first year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, things have changed a lot since then. For a while, it was 10-member juries, a certain number, 5 above a certain age, 5 below a certain age, and they distributed 9 points, that it could either be 5 to a favorite, 3 to a second favorite, or 1 to a favorite, or to a third favorite, I should say, or they could do 6 points and 3 points, or they could just give 9 points, and it was really confusing. Since 1975, they started adopting this 1 to 8 10 and 12 system that we've had ever since. Mm-hmm. So that was all entirely jury up until approximately 1997 or so, in which case most countries used exclusively juries. And then little by little, as technology began to advance across Europe, starting in 1997, a number of countries started to bring in public televotes. And after a while, then it was all entirely televote with just maybe a backup jury in case of technological issues.
As we know it now, when did the current combination of televote and jury vote, how long has that been around?
The current permutation where you'll have sort of 12 points from a jury and then an additional 12 points from a televote, because it used to just all be squished together mm-hmm. as one result. The sort of double jury, or the double result, I should say, that started in 2016. So it's a pretty recent development that we've got this double result. And some people love it, some people hate it. It makes for a very interesting discussion, which we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
But it's crazy and fascinating. Lots of numbers to crunch if you're into crunching numbers.
Good. That seems to clear up
everything and nothing.
At least the basics.
Yeah.
Okay. Jury voting.
Mm-hmm.
What is the panel for each country? I assume it's different for each country.
Yes, because if it's the same person, same people for each country, then, you know, that kind of defeats the purpose.
But what is that process?
Okay. So it's five people per country, a mm-hmm. Mix of genders, ages, experience. I think they have to be at least 16 and, you know, any age other beyond that. They announce the names of the jurors just before the contest. Yeah, a couple days before.
Mm-hmm. It's a lavish red carpet ceremony.
Sadly, no. They are supposed to, in theory anyway, kind of be kept under wraps, not share what their votes are
mm-hmm.
Until after everything is done, said and done, dust is settled. They submit their votes, like the televotes, they cannot vote for their own country,
mm-hmm.
And they go on basically what we refer to in ESC parlance as the jury final, which is the full dress rehearsal,
yep.
That is 24 hours before the actual show itself, which is also really helpful because it's shot for shot what you're going to see on television. It's also, it's good not to only just have the jury votes kind of settled before then, but if all hell breaks loose and there's some major technical difficulty on the live show, the EBU can revert to the jury final.
Gotcha.
Which is a nice little touch.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they vote on what they see the day before the live show. And those votes are counted as 50% of the total score that a country gives.
That jury performance, is there a live audience?
Yes.
There it is. Okay,
yeah, you could buy tickets
gotcha.
To that. It's just
I was imagining
as much fun.
For a second all of these juries sitting with their paper and pens mm. and an absolutely silent auditorium.
There's just six people watching the show.
Yeah, while, say, you know, who was the wildest act from this year?
Probably Iceland.
Yeah, it's just Iceland there, and they're done, and there's just absolutely no reaction.
And then
I think
there's
Iceland
like
would be okay with
one janitor in the back that's like, yeah!
Yeah.
Dude, Iceland in Israel this year? You honestly think the janitor would be applauding?
Maybe.
I think Atari would have been... Would have been perfectly fine with nobody applauding.
Yeah, actually, they would have probably reveled in it. Yeah,
yeah.
but so these folks are actually outposted. They're not on site. They kind of get like a bit of a special stream that is just for them.
Oh, uh-huh.
And they are supposed to just clam up and not reveal who they voted for, who they wanted to vote for, until the show is completely done and dusted.
Mm-hmm.
That did not happen this year.
Sure didn't.
So
one of the minor things was Norway's thing. That's like the biggest thing that I know. It was that their jury performance was really awry.
Yeah, that there was something, that there was some sort of technical issue in the jury performance for Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And
we search for like little things to explain a huge discrepancy. Because Norway was the winner of the televote. Everyone loved Norway.
Yeah.
Eric loves Norway.
Mm-hmm.
He does.
He sure do.
He do. And it's not
and
just
the,
because he's Norwegian-American.
The jury really put them, like, bottom middle, right?
But, yeah, they did.
So,
yeah, but...
But I heard they had technical difficulties on their jury performance.
Right. And the thing is, I feel like a jury who's watching a technical issue happen in a performance like that...
Ought to be forgiving.
I would imagine so. I would imagine so. Like you can't blame the singers for, you know, a cameraman stepping in the wrong place or somebody hitting a wrong button
and the
somewhere.
Backdrop malfunctioning.
Yeah,
like the back projection malfunctioning.
Well, I think in a lot of situations like that, they let them perform again. Although in this case, apparently
they did not.
They felt like it wasn't necessary.
Right, because again, it's not like it's not like a lighting rig fell off or, you know, something completely off the wall happened. So I think it was sort of a borderline judgment call by the EBU. But yeah, so Belarus this year, they, you know, how I said that they were supposed to, you know, keep everything kind of close to the vest and not discuss. That didn't happen with Belarusians.
I think we realized that something was off about Belarus's jury vote because they gave their 12 points to Israel.
Well, that was... that's like you're skipping ahead a little bit in the craziness of the story. That's the problem.
Oh, okay.
That's in the after the first semifinal that they were voting in.
Oh,
they
that's
started
right.
Discussing,
yeah, because after we saw that, this all went back even to the semifinals.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right.
So they actually started talking about, oh yeah, we voted for this one. We didn't like this one. This is what we were thinking, and the EBU were like, nah, yet, and they basically
they're multilingual. They're cosmopolitan. Yes.
Yeah, nul point for them. And they basically pulled them out, and they the jury vote for the semifinal stood, but they canceled a jury vote from those five jurors for the final instead of just saying, all right, bring in five new jurors, which they could have easily done. And then what happened was that Belarus's quote unquote jury vote was created as a composite of how Belarus has voted in the past, plus how neighboring countries with similar demographics and similar geographical have also voted in this year's. So it's this.
So there were no real jurors.
Not for Belarus.
For Belarus.
This year. Yeah.
And can I just say, that is a horrendous way to do that.
I agree.
That
we let a computer algorithm determine our jury vote on this art contest.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And there's...
There is no completely unsubjective way to do that.
Right.
It's preposterous.
And the thing is, this is a problem that has faced Eurovision before. San Marino, as a nation, keep in mind, they have a population of about 30,000 people. So that's like Roseville, Minnesota.
Yes.
Give or take.
Yes.
So they do not have enough of a population to, one, sustain a televote, and two, I don't believe that San Marino itself has a national telephone network. I believe that it's Italian.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So San Marino has never had an actual televote system. They have a constructed televote, much like what Belarus had this year for their jury. And my friend Ellie Chalkley over at ESC Insight has been crunching the numbers from the San Marinese quote-unquote televote the last couple of years and has never been able to make heads or tails of where these numbers are actually coming from. It's shady at best.
I was going to say, why do you think that is?
I don't know. I wish I had some sort of erudite explanation for this.
Why couldn't San Marino just do a small televote?
Because how do you trace it? If San Marino doesn't have...
Oh, that's right. It routes to
it's
your
an
country's
Italian
code.
Right.
Okay.
So, I mean, what I would do, if it were me, is if one country's, either their televote or their jury vote is nullified, I would just double up on the other vote. So, in this case, have San Marino's jury count twice as much, or have Belarus's televote count for twice as much.
That seems like...
It's not ideal, but it's as best as
it can
get. It
seems more fair than what's currently being done.
More fair than creating a composite from neighboring countries, which is not always... with Belarus, it might be a little bit more accurate, but...
Right, but if you have, say, Malta, for example, if this happens to Malta,
yeah,
where there is no neighbor...
What are you going to use? France, Spain, and Italy? You couldn't be more different.
Right, exactly. I mean, you kind of go by... There are these sort of pots that countries at Eurovision are placed into... you know, who's voted for each other, who's, you know, who has cultural ties. And those pots are basically used to pull and divide out for the semifinals, who's performing which semifinal. So you don't have all the former Yugoslav countries. So you kind of separate them out a little bit. If you go by those pots, it's still, you end up with like a miscellaneous pot with, say...
We have too many pots here.
Yeah, and then you have pots of... countries that you would think are friendly, but they're really not. Like, for example, Armenia and Azerbaijan are in a pot together.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That they may vote for the same countries, but they will never vote for each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a cluster F.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, and you had mentioned doing like the doubling up of whichever vote wasn't messed up. Up until a few years ago, each country just had a single 12 points, and then a 10, and an 8, and then 7 on down. And now, where there is a separate set of 12 points for the jury and for the televote, I get the appeal of having them be separate. It allows for exciting things where they're very different, which we had a ton of this year in particular. But this would be one of those things that could be obfuscated if we still had the old system. And I think that that has happened, that normally there would be one set of points that was a combination of the two votes.
But then you also have the issue, and we saw this in 2014 with, for example, the British vote, or the combined UK vote, for, in this case, Poland, where the public vote for Poland was overwhelmingly strong. Miss Slovenia, so you had, you know, if you think back, this is the song with the butter churning and the busty,
oh,
that's the
busty. Oh, yes. I know that one. All right.
All right. Yes.
It was
a special moment for people.
That was my first Eurovision. So that was like one of my first.
You never forget your
songs.
First, Eric. You never forget.
No,
your
you
first
don't. And yeah, that was definitely like.
I got to keep following this.
Well. That is not what I was going to say, for the record. But yes, it was definitely one of those things that kind of cemented, like, this is what Eurovision is.
Yeah, it's still a touchstone that people will always reference.
It really is.
But the thing is, the British televoting public went nuts for it. One, because it was a catchy song. It was, you know, eye-catching. There's a huge Polish diaspora in the United Kingdom, but the five-person jury panned it. And one person in particular put it as their least favorite, which drew everything down. So it basically negated the
and
popular...
And this was back when the 12 points they gave was the combination of jury and television.
Exactly.
So how many... I'll just...
So it gave no points to Poland altogether.
None. Wow.
That's
okay.
How much it dragged it down. Because this was the final. So it was, you know, there were 26 songs that year, I think, in the final. So it just completely negated the voice of the public.
Yikes.
Yeah. So in 2016, they decided to divide up the televote and the public vote so that, you know, if you have a say, you have a say. And actually, it does make for decent television. One, because you can immediately, or a lot more quickly, go right into revealing results. Because the
jury
vote...
Yeah, because they don't have to...
They don't have to mess around with that. That was done earlier that day. Yeah.
Now the show's only 4.5 hours. Finally.
Do you ever really want it to end, though? Do you?
No.
Do you?
No, I don't. I
really
don't.
Yeah. So that is the quandary. Is it, you know, balance can cause unbalance, and drama, you know, where do you put the drama?
I like it this way. I like I like it with the separate televote and jury vote. I really do. Mm. I say this as someone who has only seen Eurovisions where that is the case.
Right.
But I like this. Mm.
Sam, how do you feel about the way the votes are revealed currently? That there's sort of the two-stage system. There's the thing where they go through each country, and I'm glad they still have that.
Yeah, because
that's really fun. It gives each country one more chance, including the countries that didn't make the final otherwise, to kind of represent themselves for a hot minute or whatever. And I love that part. There's so much tension in just that part. Can you imagine if, just hypothetically, it was just the jury vote this year?
Oh my God.
And it was going down to the wire with North Macedonia and Sweden.
Well, the thing is, then it would have been screwed up just because the Belarusian issue, where we didn't even finish telling the Belarus story.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I'm just saying in terms of the tension and the excitement. But in that scenario, which we haven't fully gotten into this part, the winner would have changed.
Yes.
Which is
horrifying.
Unfathomable.
I mean, the entire nation of Sweden would have just absolutely fainted en masse, as would North Macedonia.
Because all of a sudden they have to host Eurovision.
Hey, you know what? I hear Skopje is lovely.
I'm sure it is. I imagine there would be a lot of city officials
going, kind oh my God.
Quaking in their boots like, oh God. Yeah.
Dang it.
We have to deal with more Greeks coming.
Yeah. Oh dear. Oh dear.
We see the lovely lakes of Skopje.
Oh. Moving on. But yeah, so Belarus, that when that constructed jury vote was eventually unveiled.
Exposed.
You know, it said, oh yeah, we gave our 12 points to Israel.
To Israel, yes.
And I'm looking at that going, okay, one, those are the first votes given to Israel, and they're 12. Mm-hmm. Second, Belarus blanked Russia.
Yeah.
And I knew immediately something was up.
Oh yeah, I mean, when we were watching it on TV, you know, they reveal, you know, mm-hmm. they put the numbers in, mm-hmm. and every single one was on the right side of the table.
Eric yeah. and I thought that they had accidentally sent their bottom of their list as the top of the
which
list,
which is what happened.
Wait, that's
list was inverted.
Oh my God,
and like,
it was clearly inverted because I remember, you know. The exciting thing about going through each country is you see them in there and then you kind of look at, okay, what did they give their 12 to? And sometimes it's very obvious because like they voted for all of like the top six except for one. And like, obviously that's going to be the one that gets 12 points. Other times it's a little bit all over the place. And there are like three near the top that have no points at that point, which means they blanked a couple of big countries, which is super exciting. Belarus,
blank.
It was like, what are, like, they blanked like, you know, all of these
no
countries?
No Sweden, no Russia, no North Macedonia.
No there Netherlands, was, yeah, nothing.
Nothing was there.
And we were like, oh, okay, well, so it's Belarus, so they probably just gave their 12 points to Russia or whatever. And then the person who is, you know, they're just doing their job, they're saying what they're supposed to say, gets all excited and goes,
because they have nothing.
Israel. And
everybody just goes, what?
Our party was just like, what are you doing?
That was relatively early on in the voting
that
process,
was.
So we weren't completely sure that something was crazy off.
Something was
still something was
off.
Something was funky. Something was funky.
So that was wild. And then as it turned out, it was 100% wrong.
Yeah, it was 100% shenanigans.
Yeah, a couple days after the contest, the EBU basically revealed, all right, something got funked up, and
we goofed,
and they, you know, jiggered the scoring. It's like, this is what it actually was. And it was revealed that Sweden had not actually won the jury vote, but North Macedonia, which, as we said in our last podcast, like, North Macedonia,
go for it.
You know, that was incredible. They had never done that well at a Eurovision event, ever. They had not made it into the final since 2012. And now suddenly, here they are with a brand new name, and they top the jury vote. It's incredible.
It was amazing. One of my favorite parts of the second half of the vote revelation was we're getting down to the wire. North Macedonia's score is one of the ones being shown last because of how well it did in the
jury vote.
The jury vote. And I think everyone in the room knows what's happening, including Tamara.
Oh yeah.
Austria from last year that ran away
with the jury,
but I think everybody knew that, like, okay, this is going to come down a little bit, like, this it's not going to do this in both. And I remember her reaction so distinctly to being told that she had gotten
50 some
not a lot of points in the televote. And like, that was, I hate to say this because she's great and it was a very lovely song, but it was kind of a formality that score was going to be low.
And
they gave it, and she had this look that was just like, yeah.
No, she knew where she was.
Yes. It's just like, okay, maybe I'll be absolutely stunned here, but I'm not going to be, which is kind of the opposite of Sweden's reaction.
Yeah.
Although you're going to say it was the opposite of the Czech Republic's reaction.
Oh, well we should mention that as well. That was a crime that occurred.
It was a crush.
And
yes.
Absolutely a major swing from what had happened in their semifinal, where they had done actually rather well.
Very well, yeah.
And then when they announced Czech Republic, you've
gotten... Because their jury vote put them in, like, top third.
Czech Republic were eighth in the jury in the final.
Yeah, I was convinced that was going to be a big... popular favorite song.
And
nope.
Seven
third
points.
Worst.
Seven,
seven points.
That was a slap in the face, and we were all really shocked by that.
These three boys huddled for the camera. It looked like they had been all dumped.
Yeah.
It looked like they all just got dumped on prom night.
Aww.
Yeah. It was just... I felt personally attacked.
And that's I think, a problem with the way that the votes are revealed now, is that it almost feels, especially
it
when the camera...
milks the drama,
it
you have to admit.
It
but.
Does, but it, especially... And I feel like I didn't realize this, or I didn't recognize it as much when I was watching it from a TV at home, but these are people.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't just artists. These aren't just, you know, performers. These mm-hmm. are human beings. And when you see an artist like Malta, or like Michaela from Malta, who is so young, you know, 18 years old, it's her real first foray into any sort of international anything.
Mm-hmm.
And she's feeling great. You know, she had a wonderful time, and she's doing well. And then suddenly 20 points from the public, and the camera's there, and it just sort of...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And like, as much as I vocally disliked Germany's song,
mm-hmm.
Sister, that
oh, like, to hear the announcers
say
we're sorry,
no points.
And then
you got to cut to them. And I remember.
Luckily, they didn't cut to them.
Oh, they didn't.
I don't remember seeing their faces.
I don't think
we got a full screen. I think we stayed on the picture-in-picture, but I don't think
we
got to zoom in on these poor girls.
Yeah. Live looking at the girls who got no points. But like, I felt so bad. I as much as I didn't like the song, as much as I felt like there were things I absolutely loved that got robbed,
mm-hmm.
I was just like, can somebody just give them like two, like just somebody give them
points?
Can
we give them one point?
Yeah.
0 points is just, at least at the Oscars when they announce the winner, they don't zoom in on the four people who lost.
Yeah. it just felt cruel.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a good system they have now. I can't help but think that there might be another way to do it. And I thought last year, which was similar in that they did the same first half, and then the second half they announced the points from the televote in
ascending
order.
Yeah.
They started with the least televotes went to whoever got the most televotes.
Right.
But this year they went by the jury.
Right.
Yeah, in order of the jury vote. And I think this was a little bit better.
I liked that.
It led to one big shock last year, which
mm-hmm.
was when Sweden
was
near the bottom of the televote.
Just,
and the air just left the room.
Junked them. Because they won the jury televote last year. Or no,
no
Austria did, but they came in really high.
Really high. Very,
yeah.
very high.
And
so
they
then
always
when they
do.
Announced their televote, that was very early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got to see Sweden's flag on the scoreboard go from top left to the right side of the board.
Well, I mean, it's not like they lost points.
But it was clear
that these were not going to be our
winners.
Yeah. The tires were going to run flat.
So let's talk about that for a second. Sweden and the disparity that they seem to have found themselves consistently in.
Hmm.
They have done incredibly well in the jury vote for the last several years,
mm-hmm.
and really remarkably not well, comparatively, in the televote. Sam, you're the expert, so I'm going to ask you this first, I guess. Why is that?
You know, it's really hard to
tell me.
Trust me,
if
I knew, I probably wouldn't have hired by SVT as some sort of a consultant at this point. But my thought is that when a jury looks at a song, are they looking for innovation? Are they looking for something dependable and something well sung and well composed and well presented? And Sweden has well done down to a T. But
they sure do.
Yeah,
yeah,
they have. You know,
it's surgical.
It's
that's
pop
their
music,
brand.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
pop music precision.
Yeah,
and it is one of their biggest exports, and they know it. And
with meatballs,
yep.
IKEA and furniture.
Yep.
Can I jump in for a second?
Yeah, you know, we have a word from our intrepid editor and friend of the parish. Yeah, come on.
What's up?
What's up?
Okay, so really quickly, after the show, I was talking to Ewan, and I asked him, "Why does and for the last 4 years?" It's just been this fairly significant mismatch with Sweden. Like, why do they do so well with the juries, even when the song is clearly not popular or not as successful? And he says it's because there's so many Swedes involved in the music industry in so many different countries.
Mm.
that they're not necessarily bribed or biased or whatever, but they just have that
familiarity.
And they recognize, and Swedish pop is such a powerful tool in terms of marketability. There's so many Swedish producers, Swedish stage directors, Swedish songwriters that kind of bleed over into like every single other country. There's like some of the most famous staging people are Swedish. There's Swedish songwriters on songs every year. I think one year there were like 11.
Something like that.
Or some absurd number. Like a significant number of songs were written or at least co-written by Swedes. And
so, yeah, so that was Derek, our editor and bon vivant.
man about town.
Commenting from the booth. Does anyone need any coffee?
Oh, yes, please. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was actually with me in Tel Aviv as well. So, so he knows his stuff. And, you know, but that's the thing. Like, when you have a professional jury of musicians and songwriters and producers and an artist, they can smell a precisely done, well-done pop song from a mile away. But an audience of popular votes of, you know, grandmas and kids and you know, from all over Europe and all different walks of life, they might respond to something a bit more different, something a little bit more eye-catching, something a bit riskier, something a little bit more...
I guess that's the part I'm not really clear on, because I don't know that Too Late for Love wasn't any of those things. And the song from last, Dance You Off from last year. And they were both just these surgical pop songs. But I'm amazed by the extent to which the televote isn't into it. Yeah. Are they just tired of it?
From an American perspective, it seems like this is... Sweden's songs tend to be the ones that sound most like what would be played on Top 40 radio here.
Right.
Very dependably.
You think they resent that and that's why they don't vote for it?
I don't think so, but I think it might be us a little bit. I think it might be us as Americans being a little bit blinded by what we expect pop music to be. And there might be some European sensibilities out there. I think I brought this up before of like people who just prefer songs that are sung in a native language for Eurovision. There might be a different, like, there's a different standard of Eurovision songs, and maybe there's a big contingent out there internationally that doesn't like Sweden's perfection.
Yeah, but they want something with a little bit more of an edge. You know, and, you know, people were, you know, people in the press center were asking me, so Sam, what do you think of the Russian song? And honestly, I realized that a lot of the answer for the Russian, well, my feelings on the Russian songs are very similar to how I feel about a lot of Swedish songs. That when something is so polished and so well produced, it's hard. It's like when you're rock climbing. Not that I rock climb that much, but like if you're trying to climb a mountain and there's nothing jagged for you to lock your fingers onto, it just slips out. You can't progress.
What's there to root for? What's there to fight for?
Yeah. What's the call to action other than, okay, this is fine. And again, just because a song doesn't garner a ton of points doesn't mean that it's everybody's least favorite. It just didn't have the same energizing call to action. It could have come in 11th place with all the countries that didn't give it points. We don't know that. I mean, we know that for the jury. We don't know for the televote.
True, there is something about,
oh, yeah,
say...
Oh, I think it might be on Eurovision.tv for all these...
Norway's
so, yeah.
song, which is not perfect, but it is exciting. It is a unique, exciting song.
Yeah, exactly.
And now Norway won the televote with a...
sizable...
With
a 30-point swing, yeah.
Yeah.
And with what is, at its core at least, a Scandinavian pop song. I feel like.
Yeah.
We had talked in the preview episode about how perhaps the biggest concern about this was that it felt a bit dated because it was a bit more like Heroes than like Toy. That it's more straightforward Europop. And obviously there are differences. There is the yoiking and the presentation.
And the dear God.
Yeah, the dear God. who demanded the votes and got them.
Oh, he got them, yeah.
Render unto me the televote.
Ah! says the dear God.
And is that it? Because I feel like...
The dear God, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the dear God. Yeah. So San Marino will be coming in, Dear God 2021. Yeah.
It'll be just Serhat clad. Serhat. Enormous taxidermied stag.
Is this what you want?
Eurovision is this.
The Serhat jackalope.
Those were both fairly straightforward pop songs. One did incredibly well and one did not. And
is it because the people just like something a little bit odd?
Honestly,
I think they tune into Eurovision.
I mean,
they look
at the last.
They like Toy last year, yeah. 2 years ago. What was it that? Portugal.
No,
wasn't
Portugal.
Exactly
Portugal.
Odd,
but it wasn't odd,
but it was different.
It was different. It was engaging for older viewers wanting a classic sound. There was something very timeless about it.
True.
And there's something oddly engaging about Salvador Sobral as a performer.
And very regional, right?
Very.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
suddenly I'm starting to understand why Netherlands won. That, like, we've had this run, 1944.
Marpelle Schleich.
And Toy. And maybe it was just time for a song like that. Is that how it goes?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I keep saying this before. People ask me, so Sam, what is a Eurovision song? Like, there's no such thing anymore. Like, in a contest that can have any of those songs as winners and have songs like the Buranovsky Babushi, like the Russian grannies, come in second in 2012.
Should have won.
And,
robbed.
Over Euphoria.
Hashtag justice for grannies.
Fight me. but it's, you know, anything can rise to the top if it's memorable enough and if it's well-produced enough and if the stars align. Like, anything... You know, nothing goes in completely hopelessly unless it is forgettable.
That's just the magic of allowing both the televote and the jury vote, because so few people are swayed by the same
right.
flavor, the same taste that goes into making one of these things.
Right.
Like,
and to see a song like Marpelle Schleich, which, you know, was kind of overshadowed in the run-up by the Italian song for that year, which everybody thought, oh yeah, we'd be, you know, it's Occidentalis Karma by Francesco Gavani. Everybody thought that was going to win, the dude with the gorilla suit. And then Salvador just took both the televote and the public vote with the largest margin, one of the largest margins ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this fact that the song that came in second that year, granted, I'm biased because I worked on the team for that song that year, you know, that in any other year, that would have won by an insane margin as well, because mm-hmm. that was also second in
yep.
terms of televote and jury vote.
Yeah.
It just happened to be up against...
That's how it goes.
Yeah.
I mean, how great of a contest do we have if it can be won by all of these different things?
It's beautiful. It's wonderful.
Fantastic.
It's really exciting.
Good.
It is.
So, Sam, I'm going to...
We're just jealous of Europe at this point.
I'm going to try and stump Sam here.
Oh, God.
Hopefully you don't have these in front of the...
This specific page.
Yeah. So, there are a lot of discrepancies in terms of televote versus jury vote that we've touched on.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Sweden being second in jury and ninth in televote. North Macedonia being first in jury, 12th in televote, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
There was one country that had the same rank in both.
Ooh. All right. Spoiler alert, I actually do have the thing in front of me.
Right.
So I can't...
All right, well then, Danny, who was it?
If you're asking me, is it San Marino?
It is not. No.
Oh,
no.
Thank God.
San Marino had a huge discrepancy.
Yeah.
They were, as mentioned at the
top. Oh, that's right. And the televote loved them.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
10th place versus 23rd, which is crazy. But Albania.
Mm-hmm.
Albania doing what feels... This, I saw this and I thought, that's about right. They were 17th in both. In both the televote and in the jury.
And which resulted in a 17th place overall in the final night. So that's easy math for them.
Yeah.
But honestly, for them to come in to the final at all in an Albanian language song, where, you know, you have a small diaspora around, but not massive. It's not like, say, Poland or many of these other countries. But for them to make it to the final second year in a row in an Albanian language song, I was very, very happy for them.
Was their song last year? Was that Mal?
Mal, yeah.
Mal, yeah, that was not bad.
That guy, if you're listening and you don't know this song, I recommend you look it up. I'm not saying it's a dynamite song.
Exactly. I think so. Depending on what you're into.
Holy cow, that guy can sing.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best voices I've heard in recent years. Absolutely. Regardless of opinion on the song itself. Yeah. That one was really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice guy, too.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. It's the scoring. We could talk about this forever. And 2019 was just such an interesting compilation of stories of how, you know, how the results shook out once they did eventually shake out. So fascinating and infuriating sometimes. But, you know, that's what keeps us coming back. You know, we love these stats. We love this information. And
I just, we can analyze the point system so much because, I don't know, we're not told the amount of votes that come out at the Oscars. We're not told the percentage by which a person won there.
Mm.
But we are definitely told at Eurovision.
Oh, yeah.
This transparency is what makes it even more exciting.
Could you imagine if we found out that, like, Green Book beat Roma by one vote?
By one vote.
Something like that. Wouldn't that be wild?
I know. It's
better. They should do that. That would be great.
At the second and third Academy Awards, I know, they actually disclosed after the ceremonies how many there were. And then they haven't done that for like 90 years now or so, but I just think that would be great.
That'd be great.
If we knew like 3 months down the line, if they gave us the Pricewaterhouse statistics.
Yeah, that would be so much
Green
fun.
Book won by 3 votes.
And like, it wouldn't shock me. This isn't a movie podcast, but
yeah.
I bet it was close is all I'm saying. So.
I still like The Favorite.
Would you say it's
my favorite?
Would you say it's Danny's favorite?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Olivia Colman.
Yeah.
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 Shout out to Amy Klobuchar, who was in the same row as Danny and I when we saw The Favorite. Fun fact. You know what, guys? I think it is a movie podcast.
It is now. The Minnesota Politics Movies and Eurovision Podcast.
Oh, God.
We should change the header on the...
And with that, I think our latest episode of this movie/Minnesota Politics/Eurovision show must come to a close. But we have been 12 Points from America, and you can check us out on the socials, as the kids say.
They do.
They do.
They do say that.
Yeah, several kids have said that. Yes. And we're at Twitter and Facebook at 12 Points USA. That's 12 Points USA.
Let me see you 12 points.
That's right.
That's how you'll remember it. Anyway.
And that's it.
I hope so.
I'm Eric.
I'm Samantha.
I'm Danny.
And we will see you
next time.
Week.
But until then, America,
stop listening now.